Hi everyone, welcome back to the 30th video for the Old Testament Survey course. We're working through the poetic books, and in this section, we'll look at the book of Proverbs. And let's start with some background issues. First, the author. The first verse says that this book is the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. And Solomon was famous for his wisdom, including writing Proverbs. So much of this book comes from Solomon. However, other sections are called Sayings of the Wise. And chapter 25, verse 1 says that these proverbs were edited together in Hezekiah's time. And there are also final collections and many sayings from other authors, such as Agur and Lemuel. So Solomon is the author of a large portion of this book, but not probably the final author. Like Psalms, Proverbs is a collection from multiple authors edited together. Now, the date of this book is from the time of the monarchy. Obviously, a lot was written during the reign of Solomon, and it was edited together in Hezekiah's time, and possibly other parts were added later. We don't know. But now let's look at the organization of this book. The major outline of this book is fairly clear, but some of the details are disputed. The book clearly starts with seven verses that act as a preamble. This section describes the purpose of the book in detail. And then the rest of the first nine chapters is called the prologue. This section also gives a more detailed introduction to the book as a whole, and is made up of larger organized sections. There are actually 10 lessons in the first nine chapters, from a father to his son, encouraging the son to pursue wisdom. And this section describes two ways, two destinies, and two voices. There are two ways to live, according to Proverbs, the way of the wise and the way of the fool. And there are two destinies that result from these two ways. Obviously, the way of the wise leads to a good destiny and the way of a fool to a bad destiny. Classic Deuteronomistic theology. And in this section, there are two voices that call out for attention. One voice, the voice of wisdom, counsels wisdom and righteousness, but the other voice tempts to wickedness. And then there's the main body of the book, which contains seemingly unorganized single sayings, single proverbs. One proverb doesn't show any obvious connection to the next one. They're kind of like a salad tossed together in seemingly random order. But this main body, there are some clearly labeled larger collections. There are two sections called the Proverbs of Solomon. There are two sections called the Sayings of the Wise. And then, as I mentioned, there are some final collections at the end of the book, including sayings of Agur and King Lemuel, and the poem on the virtuous woman. Now let's look at the content of Proverbs, starting with some key verses. First is Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. And it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For the understanding, proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline." Now, this passage is the entire preamble of the book. And as such, it gives the reason for the book as a whole and the purpose for studying the book of Proverbs, so that the reader may attain wisdom, understanding, and discretion in order to live a successful life that prospers in all godliness. And this passage contains the theme verse for the entire book, that the fear of the Lord is the chief part of wisdom. Now, some people would say that the book of Proverbs is a fairly secular book, approaching life without God. But this verse proves that God, the Torah, and the covenant is at the heart of the wisdom books. And we don't read them rightly if we don't keep God in major consideration. Next is chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. It says, "My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." And this passage obviously is an invitation to the reader to pursue wisdom. And we're to do so with the fervency and passion like we're searching for treasure. And it promises that the benefits will be worth the effort. And then is chapter 4, verses 5 through 8, verse 13 and verse 23. They say, "Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake wisdom, and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over you. Wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom. Though it costs you all you have, get understanding. Esteem her, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will honor you. Hold on to instruction. Do not let it go. Guard it well, for it is your life. Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life." Now, all of these verses are different ways of saying the same thing. They're commands to get wisdom, no matter the cost. And once wisdom is attained, it needs to be preserved and guarded against deception and temptation. And the reader is counseled that wisdom is absolutely indispensable for life. Next is chapter 8, verses 1 through 5. "Does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights along the way, where the paths meet, she takes her stand. Beside the gates leading into the city at the entrance, she cries aloud, 'To you, O men, I call out. I raise my voice to all mankind. You who are simple, gain prudence. You who are foolish, gain understanding.'" Now, in this passage, wisdom is personified as a woman calling out to all who will hear and inviting them to learn wisdom from her. And this is contrasted in later verses with the harlot Folly, who is tempting the reader to a foolish, sinful life. Then finally is chapter 9, verses 10 through 12. It says, "The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For through me your days will be many, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you are a mocker, you alone will suffer." Now, this passage also emphasizes the fear of the Lord as a key to wisdom and success in life. And it reiterates Deuteronomistic theology. If you're wise, you'll be rewarded. If you're foolish, you'll suffer. These are some of the key ideas of the book of Proverbs. Now, you may have noticed that all the key verses in Proverbs were from the preamble and prologue. And that's because these two sections introduce and summarize pretty much the rest of the book. The rest of the book is an elaboration and specific examples of the two ways. They're an application to specific issues and ways to live out wisdom. So the rest of the content is specific examples of wisdom and living it out through individual proverbs. So we're going to look at the rest of the content by looking a little bit more deeply at the nature of biblical wisdom and the nature of a proverb. First, what is wisdom? There are two ideas I want to look at in order to understand the nature of biblical wisdom. First is that wisdom is skill. The root meaning of the Hebrew word for wisdom is skill. It's a somewhat general word, and therefore it begs the question, well, skill in what? So wisdom is skill in applying the Torah and the prophets. You see, knowing God's commands is not enough if you do not rightly put them into practice. You know, think about Job's friends, and think about the Pharisees in the New Testament. They knew their stuff, but they were not wise because they did not rightly live it out. So wisdom is skill in applying the Torah and prophets to all of life. Wisdom in the book of Proverbs applies to a wide range of topics. This includes money, wealth, and poverty. It includes motivation, work or sloth, relationships, covers sex, neighbor, family, speech, truth-telling, lying, mocking, gossip, proper instruction and rebuke, covers wisdom, how to find and apply wisdom. It covers our attitudes, envy and spite, or hope and joy, etc. There's many more topics. And wisdom is applying the Torah and the prophets to life choices. You see, life is made up of many little choices. And Proverbs says there's only really two choices. You'll either be wise or you'll be foolish. You'll either be righteous or wicked. And Proverbs talks about advanced choices. That is, choosing in advance. Choose now how you will act tomorrow by the little choices you make today. Build habits and disciplines now, and they will serve you well in the future.
These are the years when a man changes into the man he's going to become the rest of his life. Just be careful who you change into.
You see, nobody just accidentally slides into wisdom. You have to pursue it. And this is not legalism. It's not that it's all up to you, make your life. Because God gives grace. And it's all because of his grace. And God gives growth. But we need to plant and water. And wisdom is applying the Torah and the prophets to moral and ethical and religious choices. Like I mentioned, in some ways the book of Proverbs can seem almost secular, but in reality it is profoundly God-centered. Therefore, it's illegitimate to preach Proverbs as just keys to a successful life without also teaching that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. In other words, you cannot have true wisdom without profound reverence for God, as we'll see in a minute. So, wisdom is applying the Torah and the prophets by being thought-provoking. In other words, biblical wisdom is not asking for blind, dumb obedience, but it invites us in to thoughtfully wrestle through all of these issues. Let me give just one famous example. Proverbs 21:9 says, "It is better to live on a corner of the roof than to share a house with a quarrelsome wife." Now let's think about this for a minute. Now where I live, it can be very cold and rainy for a large part of the year. Imagine how miserable it would be to be confined to a small portion on the roof. But Proverbs tells us that that would be better than living inside a warm, spacious house with a quarrelsome wife. Now, doesn't that make any unmarried reader really want to be extra careful in choosing who they will marry because you have to live with this person for the rest of your life. Now, that's just one example of the kind of thing that wisdom teaches for a successful life. So wisdom is skill in applying God's instruction to every part of life. Now, the second major idea of biblical wisdom is that it is seeing all of life from a God-centered perspective. Now, let me start to explain this by contrasting this with what the Bible says about a fool. The Bible says that the fool says in his heart, there is no God. In other words, the fool places himself at the center of his life and God has no part of it. Now, some would believe that God doesn't in fact exist, or others might believe that maybe he exists, but he's distant or somehow he's irrelevant to everyday life. See, for the fool, God is not in the picture. And that is certainly not biblical wisdom, to live without God. But now let me contrast that with one more bad example. There are many people who say they believe in God, and maybe even do. Maybe they even claim that he has a part in their life, but they relegate God to a supporting role, a bit part on the margins of their life, who only comes into the picture when he's invited. That person still might consider themselves to be a believer in God, but they place themselves at the center of their life. Yeah, God's now in the picture, but he's in the periphery. And every thought and decision is still focused on the individual person as the defining point and goal of their reality. They may say that they believe in God, but practically they live much of their life as if he didn't exist. They live for themselves, and God is a mere afterthought. That is not biblical wisdom. By contrast, biblical wisdom is putting God at the center and realizing that it is all about him. Now, that's wise because that is reality. God is the most important person in the universe, and we are all supporting characters in his story. And we are wise to the extent that we know this and live in light of it. When we consider God and his ways and his purposes above our own, when all of our activities and relationships are mediated through Christ, when our goals and our passions and our character and our authority are intentionally conformed to his. When we look at every part of our life, not from who I am and what I'm doing, but who is God and what is he doing in this situation? Now, I know that's difficult and it's unnatural because we're born with innate selfishness and sinfulness. And I look at the world from behind these eyes, from who I am. But the good news and the message of Proverbs is that we can grow in wisdom. And our minds can be changed. And the more God-centered our heart and life is, the more we are living in biblical wisdom and in what the New Testament calls sanctification. Therefore, in every part of our life, we should ask, for instance, how is God involved in every decision and relationship? How can the Lord be honored in my workplace? How do my entertainment and recreation choices reflect Jesus and who he is? How is God present? And how can I make him central and honor him in all of my life? See, that kind of attitude will lead us into biblical wisdom. And Proverbs provide great help in this. And now let's answer the question, what is a proverb? Simply, a proverb is a statement of a general truth. It comes from a thoughtful, wise observation, and then it is put into a concise, memorable form. Like, look before you leap. Better dead than red. You see, it's a truth compacted into easy-to-carry form, easy-to-remember form. Therefore, it's important to realize the proverb is not the same as a promise. Because it is so short and memorable, it is not precise to the level of a guarantee. For example, I could say, study hard and you will pass the test. And that's true. As long as you study the right material, as long as you get a good night's sleep, etc., and many other variables. So studying hard will help you pass the exam, all other things being equal. But it doesn't promise no other issues will interfere. That's why we need to be careful how we apply Proverbs. For instance, Proverbs 22:6, which says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. Now, this is true. And parents should be conscientious in the way they train their children. However, there are many other factors that might influence any child. And children make their own choices. The parents have a strong influence, but they are not the only influence. So if a kid goes bad, be careful not to use this verse to blame the parents automatically, because there might be more going on. And it's also important to realize that a proverb is not the same as a command. You see, it takes wisdom to know how and when to apply wisdom. Let me give you a famous example. Proverbs 26:4 says, do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you'll be like him yourself. But the very next verse says, answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. That means that there are certain times and circumstances when we should not answer a fool, because if we do, we'll lower ourselves to his level. But there are other times when we need to answer a fool so that he does not think that he is right, so that his falsehood does not go unchallenged and lead others astray. But it takes wisdom and prayer to know when either response is most appropriate, especially in this age of social media. And every proverb demands that we exercise thoughtfulness and wisdom to determine if, how, and when to put it into practice. Then one last question. How can we best read Proverbs? Well, there's more than to this question than I can answer at this time, but I'll try to give you three principles that I hope are helpful. First, read them in light of their parallelism. Let the two or more parallel lines inform one another. Compare the two and read them together for the whole message. Second, compare each proverb with other proverbs on the same topic. For instance, if you read only one proverb on money, you might conclude that the reason someone is poor is that they are lazy. Or if you read only a different proverb on money, you might conclude that the reason somebody's poor is that they are oppressed. But really, you should read both of these proverbs and more to see that these situations is sometimes more complex than either of these. And then use wisdom to discern, why is this person poor? Is it because they're lazy? Is it because they're oppressed? Is it a combination of all of these and more ideas? So use wisdom to discern within the entire teaching of Proverbs, and not just pick and choose one or the other. And then finally, read them slowly and ponder the life implications. Now, when you're reading through the historical books, it is appropriate to read entire chapters and more at a time. But when you're reading the book of Proverbs, it might be more appropriate to read one verse and then stop and think about it. Ponder the implications and how it can apply to your life. Chew on it a while until you get it. And now let's look at the theological themes of the book of Proverbs. The first is wisdom. Now, I hope that's not surprising to anyone that that's a major theme of Proverbs. This book is about attaining wisdom and living the wise life as opposed to the foolish life. It's about reaping the rewards of living a wise life. And the second theme is the fear of the Lord. This awe and respect, and yes, even fear of God, is the key to all true wisdom. It is the beginning of wisdom, not in the sense of the first step that you then leave behind, but it is the beginning of wisdom in the sense of being the foundation upon which all wisdom must be built. Because all the world conforms to God's moral ways, and therefore we should conform to God. Now, speaking of God's moral ways, the third theme of Proverbs is the two ways. That is, the way of the wise or the way of the fool, the way of the righteous or the way of the wicked. See, there are only two possibilities in Proverbs. We're either for God or against Him. There is no neutral ground. If we do not actively pursue the way of wisdom, we will drift into the way of folly. And Proverbs is very clear that the way of wisdom ends in blessing and prosperity, and the way of folly ends in disaster and regret. Which leads us to the fourth theme, which is, you guessed it, Deuteronomistic theology. It's clearly taught and elaborated in the book of Proverbs, and I hope that you recognize it by now. But notice also that, like in Job, it is not always immediate or simple, but sometimes it is complex and nuanced, and we need wisdom to understand and live it out. So now, let's review. First, we'll review the organization of Proverbs, and it is preamble, prologue, the body, and the final collections. And then we'll review the themes of Proverbs. They are wisdom, fear of the Lord, the two ways, and Deuteronomistic theology. Okay, there we have it. That is a summary survey of the book of Proverbs. Now, I think the main idea of Proverbs are fairly easy to understand, but they take a lifetime of pursuing wisdom to deeply grasp and to live out. In the next section, we'll look at the book of Ecclesiastes. Thanks for watching.